Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this October the 7th on the West Coast, now October the 8th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Would also like to say hello, good evening, or g'day to whoever may be listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world and on Blog Talk Radio.com. Well, there's a lot going on in the world, and tonight's guest is going to share what he feels is some exciting news in regard to a case that's been brewing for some time now. There have been some decrees issued to the court, to both parties, in respect to his current findings and demands for the procedures to be undertaken in the near future in regard to a very important case that has everyone on the edge of their seats. Who is tonight's guest? Well, he is a talk show host. In his own right, he has a show called A Marine's Disquisition, heard Monday through Friday on blogtalkradio.com and on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and he's former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977, and his name is Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome to Evident Footprints. How are you, my friend?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, around the world, and Semper Fi to all my Marines around the world and to my lovely friends there in Sochi, Russia, and Kazan, Russia. I know you're listening. Yeah, yeah. You got that right. Da. The latest news. Do you want to hear the really latest news here? No. This is going to blow you away, man.
Yes, I know. I know you've got some documents, so we want to let the listeners know.
I mean, I got a printer over here going over to trying to print the documents out. I'm getting a 25-page response as we speak, and I've got tons of more information that I have yet to have the opportunity to really ascertain. But the bottom line is, I've got some papers that are filed to the United States District Court, Central Division of California, in a case that many people out there understand as Captain Pamela Barnett, ETAL, versus Barack Hussein Obama, ETAL, and a lot of people refer to this case as Alan Keyes, Ambassador Alan Keyes' case. Mm-hmm. But Captain Pamela Barnett is the original person on this suit that Dr. Orley Tate has brought forth, and as we all know, on October the 5th, at 8:30 in the morning, they had a hearing scheduled. It was reassigned till 11 a.m., then reassigned again to 1 p.m., and after a two-hour court battle, the judge took it under advisement for the motion to dismiss by the powers to be in the Barack Hussein Obama side. But everything changed because in that 2 hours, the judge kind of chastised the lawyers, and even though he said he would take the case under advisement on the 5th, today, in just the last 3 hours, the court has documented the filing of the final, I repeat, the final orders from the court for all motions for summary judgment hearings to be set on December the 7th. All motions filed for summary judgment must be filed prior to November the 16th,
mm-hmm.
and opposition to any motion for summary judgment must be filed to the court by November the 26th, and any sub-reply to a motion for summary judgment must be filed by November the 30th. It goes on with this scheduling order. Final pre-trial conference will be held in this court on January the 11th, 2010 at 8:30 a.m. and jury trial is set for January the 26th at 8:30 a.m. in this court, i.e. this court, United States District Court, Central District of California. Now, What eludes many people is the fact that Dr. Orley Tates has asked if the plaintiffs are willing to stipulate that the scheduling order has been made final rather than moot, that it is now time for us to begin discovery, and in this order that's been filed to the court. The plaintiffs, i.e., Captain Pamela Barnett's side and Dr. Orley Tanks, they're coming forth with notices for production of documents and depositions to be made by Barack Hussein Obama and all of the other defendants in this case, along with the Dusatecum and the subpoena Dusatecums to the non-parties that are involved in this case. Now, what's really going down here, ladies and gentlemen, the judge on October the 5th made it very clear in the courtroom, very specifically stating that the scheduling order would only be important if the case were going to go forward. And at this time, this seems to be very on point because the scheduling order was filed and docketed to the case today by the court. The civil minutes were filed by the clerk of the court to mandate that the scheduling order was final. Therefore, the judge is not going to dismiss this case, even though he has not signed the order to deny the dismissal. It apparently is he has given word to the clerk to mandate that the scheduling order be made permanent and official. This is going to rock the boat in Washington, D.C., to say the least, much less to those that are the lawyers involved with the United States District Court in the form of the Justice Department of the United States government, because these lawyers for the Justice Department are in this court all the time going after criminals, i.e. Bank robbers, i.e. embezzlers. So all of a sudden the judge that can't be bought off, the former United States Marine, in this case, is Judge Carter, and Judge Carter obviously is not going to be bought off, is not going to be scared away, and from what I'm reading so far, it tells me that Barack Hussein Obama is going to have to bring forth some documents, because the subpoena Dusatecums that are going out to none other than the universities, the colleges, the Department of State, and the Secretary of State, as well as to Hawaii, and their demand. And I don't know what their documents are, but Don, what's your guess? The documents you're going out for when they're sending subpoena Dusatecum to Harvard, or subpoena Dusatecum to?
They're looking for, of course, his transcripts and
correct.
all these documents that claim that he was the president of the Harvard Law Review and et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly, so. And that's what a subpoena Dusatecum is all about. It goes out to non-parties of the suit to bring forth, to mandate that they produce their documents that they have in their possession that are not held by the plaintiff or the defendant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with all of this research going on, we're going to see some documents that are going to have to be filed to the court. And they're going to have to be filed before December, what was the date? December the 7th.
Okay, now, Drew, I have a, oh, that's Pearl Harbor Day, too.
Yeah, you caught that.
I have a quick question for you.
I got a quick answer. You may not like it.
And on Monday, you know, when I was on your show, I know you brought, you know, some of these topics up, particularly these motions to dismiss. Do you have any indication from the documentation, in layman's terms, what methods or what arguments the defense was using? Now we're talking about Obama's side, in other words, to cause a motion to dismiss. In other words, on what grounds were they claiming that
they were claiming he's the president of the United States, and it's he's been authorized, he's been brought forth as an election by the people of the states, and I would expect that they probably threw that up there, that if the states had ratified him to go on the docket, then there's no reason to go forward asking for his birth certificate in this case, because the states already ratified him to be a legal party of interest, and therefore the plaintiffs have no standing as legal parties of interest because, quote, they weren't running on the docket sheet, they weren't running on the presidential ticket, and even if they were, such as Keith, there was no prayer that he could possibly have won the election.
Yes.
And that's what I see. That's what I see they brought forth. And this kind of relates to the fact that this is the argument that they've been using in all these other courts where nobody has standing in the court because they weren't running against Obama. And the only one, and the implication was, or would have been, the only people that would have standing to sue Obama would be the adverse party that could possibly have beaten him if more information had been brought forth. And who was that party? John McCain.
Yeah.
Well, John McCain's not going to sue because his own birth record is in question. Okay? So he's not going to sue. And the Democrats and the Republicans, it's nothing but a Republican government. It doesn't make any difference if they call themselves a Democrat or a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't got no change. We've got all we have is more of the same.
Yeah. Drew, on the basis of what we know has been redacted from the filing papers put forth by the Democratic National Committee after their nomination in you know, at the Denver convention, has that document at all surfaced in this case to your knowledge? And do you expect
I know that that of the 50 states that are that put were supposedly ratifying the authorization for Barack Hussein Obama to be on the ticket, only one got the documentation proper, and that was Hawaii.
Only Hawaii.
Only Hawaii.
Yeah.
The other 49, including Alaska, including Louisiana, which we've got the strongest laws on the books for the investigation of a president, especially Louisiana, they did not, and Louisiana has basically not done, the Attorney General of Louisiana has basically turned his head the other direction.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And all the judges out there across America have basically laid over and just ignored, and basically just laid over and said, well, I mean, there's no standing. These people don't have standing. I mean, he's been elected. It's time to move on. The birth certificate issue is a dead deal. Well, what are they listening to? Who are they watching? Well, obviously, they're not listening to the massive amount of Americans who have come up and when you look at the number of people that voted, Don, and versus the number of people that didn't vote, there were more people that voted in this presidential election than the last five elections.
Yeah, it, I certainly could say that about the deceased that voted.
Correct.
Yeah.
And how many, you know, in Louisiana alone, there were over 40,000 dead people that were on the books that was voting.
Yeah,
40,000.
I mean,
but
this
Barack Obama, Barack Hussein Obama didn't win Louisiana.
Yeah.
There has been documented 8,000 in Louisiana, in Arkansas rather, that voted, that had been deceased for more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't carry Arkansas either. Not that they didn't try, but 57% of the people that voted in the election voted against Barack Hussein Obama in the state of Arkansas.
Hmm.
Okay, now here's the big, this is the big crunch here. The big crunch is that of the people that voted in Arkansas, when you put it in a racial perspective, the number of black people that voted could have easily defeated McCain. So the black population in Arkansas is kind of split on a basis of 60-40. 60% of the black population would have voted for Barack Hussein Obama, and the other 40% would have voted against him. And what gets me is everybody looks to Barack Hussein Obama as, well, he's a black man. Well, wait a minute. He's a half white man too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so he's not a black man. He's not, you know, he does come from, and now we're getting the stories about Ayers is the real writer of the book that has been gone out and said that he wrote this book while he was on vacation in Indonesia, but in actuality, Ayers has come out and said that he wrote the book.
Well, and what did I write in my own reporting?
And I'm looking at your own reports that you said that Ayers had your hand in it when Barack Obama and Ayers were together in Indonesia.
Yeah, yeah. It's obvious that I stumbled across a very, very pertinent reference to Barack and Michelle Obama having been in Bali, of all places.
At the same time when Ayers was there.
Yeah, and writing this book, supposedly for the purpose of being secluded on hiatus, basically, so that he could write uninterrupted this book. And
uninterrupted, yeah, sure. Okay.
and pertaining to facts that he couldn't even recount accurately during his campaign. And I know that for a fact because I was listening to every word he was saying and comparing it to what he had written and what I had discovered about what he had written. And you had three different stories going on at the same time, if not more. References to his own age that were inaccurate. References to his alleged family members' ages, again, that were inaccurate. Now, so it makes you wonder if the issue is just standing. Why is it that an American, someone we know has been born and raised in America and has not given up their citizenship, forfeited their passport for a passport from another country, why is that become an issue that we don't have standing and that someone who absolutely should not have standing does? There's the Hegelian dialectic again. How is it that argument stands itself, that argument? How is it that insane argument has standing in the court of law?
Well, here's one for you. This is the argument in the case. Let's go forward to this case this last Monday. The judge made it very clear in the court. I had three Marines sitting there listening to this very intently. And one of these Marines is a retired judge advocate general. Judge advocate general. He wasn't an officer in charge. He was a he would be like the chief clerk of the court.
Mm-hmm.
So to speak. Okay. He was, he was a judge advocate general, liaison.
Okay.
There's a proper word for it, and I can't think of it. It's right off the top of my head, but he was the chief cook and bottle washer for the records to be filed into the court before the judges, and the officers. Bottom line is, he heard the arguments in the case, and he said, Drew, the one thing that is gonna go out that you gotta be looking for is the judge made it very clear, to all people that were present, and he was specifically very clear with information toward lawyers representing Obama, and that was that the scheduling order would be moot if the case was dismissed. And if the case is dismissed, there would not be a need for a scheduling order to be done. And he made this very clear when he chastised the lawyers for Obama. Now, when Roger West and Gary, when Roger West and David DeJute were being chastised, they were taking notes. And they understood very clearly that if the judge puts out an order dismissing the scheduling order, then basically the case was going to be dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's what basically is what you want to listen to. But the scheduling order was mandated onto the books today by the judge to be printed out and made final.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't look like the judge is leaning toward any dismissal.
Yeah.
Okay? But when you look at the arguments that come about from West, from Roger West specifically, he says, quote, he sent this out to Orly Taints tonight. You are obviously not a student of military history, period, because you appear confused. Let me be clear. Period. Per Judge Carter's order, comma, discovery is stayed in this case. Period. We will not agree to any discovery in this case at this time. That means today.
Yeah.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the judge has not filed an order specifically saying that the dismissal was denied, but he did put an order out in September advising all parties that the discovery would be stayed until the opportunity to hear the case on October the 5th, 2009. Well, the case has moved forward. It's gone past October the 5th. Past October the 5th. The judge's order said that that discovery would be stayed till October the 5th. So let's get the record straight here. They're playing parliamentary tricks and parliamentary law. They're utilizing the stance of, well, I've got an order here that discovery is stayed, and until I get an order from the judge that tells me that I have to abide by the order, I'm not going to present any of these records. But the bottom line is, the subpoena duce tecum goes forth pursuant to what the judge's scheduling order was issued today as going forth, mandated that the motion for summary judgment hearing for December the 7th is a motion for summary judgment by Orly Taints against Barack Hussein Obama in demanding records subpoena duce tecum.
Mm-hmm.
That is a court legal term, ladies and gentlemen, that says that the in the opposition has the right to these records to prove the case that these records are in the hands of other parties and they should be produced.
Well, this is part of federal election laws. This is certainly something the Federal Election Commission ignored. We know,
and some of this subpoena deuce tecum is going out to those people.
Yes. Well, this is precursory to running an election, and this has always been the problem: is that these arguments have gone on behind the scenes, and when it comes forward, when someone brings certainly substantial enough evidence to have a reversal of these dismissals, they use this silly argument that no one has any standing. My goodness, who has standing if the people bringing the suit themselves don't have standing? I don't know.
Well, see, this is one of the things that Judge Carter mentioned in the court on the 5th.
Okay.
If the military man that is serving the people doesn't have standing, then who has standing? We need to move forward on this case. He didn't say it on October the 5th. He said it back in September when they had a hearing to set this motion for dismissal. If the military man doesn't have standing in this case, who has standing in this case? Because the military man is going off to war listening to the orders from the president. And how well can that be documented, Don? Just in the last 10 days, we find out that the commanding officer of all the military men in Afghanistan hasn't talked to the President of the United States but twice since he was appointed 7 months ago. And one of those times was when Obama was in Copenhagen trying to pull, you know, making a jerk of himself. I mean, at no time in the history of the United States has the president lowered himself to the Secretary of State's position in going out to promote an Olympic event or any other sporting event or any other event of any kind. No time in history. And here we are. This president thinks that he's got all the power, and he can walk into Copenhagen with his entourage of 400 Marine security guards, with his wife flying over on another plane, basically throwing the affluence of how rich the United States is with all the bodyguard services, all the limousines, over 48 limousines, transported by C-5A. And 171s and other aircraft, i.e. the C-130s, took all these motor cars to Europe in a motorcade. It took up the time and the patience of the people in Copenhagen to promote the city of Chicago. And the city of Chicago is already reeking in poverty, reeking in debt, to millions of dollars. Even today in Detroit, 15,000 people showed up to get 5,000 applications for stimulus money that Barack Obama said that he's got $15 million to give to the poor people in Detroit.
Yeah, you wonder did those limousines return back to the United States, or were they given as
They all came back. They're all brought back by the United States Air Force, United States Marine Corps, and the United States Army.
Yeah, but that's unheard of. Have you ever heard of anything like that before?
The president flies all over the world with an entourage like that. Every time the president leaves the United States, he takes an entourage of about 45 vehicles. That's behind the scenes, Don. You don't hear about the 247 Marines that are on security guard duty for the president. Even every time Bill Clinton came home to Arkansas to basically say that he was an Arkansan when he was president, the Marines were here at a hotel just off bay, outside the base here, camped out four to a room.
Mm-hmm.
And they were here a week to 10 days before Clinton showed up. And what was their job? They were scouting around the places to where they were going to be stationed, and they would be in command of maybe three or four other Marines underneath them. And all the rest of the Marines would show up hours before the president did.
Mm-hmm.
And the limousine service, the limousines locked Little Rock down. They literally locked. Arkansas came to a dead stop every time Bill Clinton came back to Little Rock. You could not maneuver through this town at all. I had an office on Highway 10, and I was basically at one time 5 miles outside the city limits. But thank God I was in the west part of town, because the rest of the town was basically locked down, because I was on the other side of the big loop of a freeway that basically encircles Little Rock. And that loop literally had hundreds of police cars traveling around in a big circle when Clinton came to town. And the same thing's going true with Obama, but Obama is not doing this once every 2 or 3 months. He's traveling every week, every other week, to all over the world, not just in the United States. And every time he goes somewhere, he took his wife to New York City for a pizza or a dinner on the town, not on the wedding anniversary, just a birthday present.
Mm-hmm.
Took her up to New York, shut down half of a city so his wife could have a night on the town in New York. She goes out like it's no nonchalant deal into the city of Washington, D.C., and basically shuts down the farmer's market. And the farmers that go to the farmer's market, they just literally throw their hands up in the air. She comes out and spends $50 to $100 for some foodstuffs for the White House, and they lose $3,000 in sales.
Yeah.
Where's the sanity here?
Well, we had Bill Clinton, the audience has probably heard this before, stopping air traffic on the tarmac of LAX. Bill Clinton was getting a haircut.
Yeah, and $400 haircut.
Yeah, you remember that. That was a number of years ago.
I remember that. I remember that very bluntly.
Yeah.
And I also remember that Hillary Rodham Clinton made comments like, I can't remember. I don't remember. I don't recall.
Oh, yeah.
And during an investigation, I don't recall going up to Whitewater. I don't recall investing that $1,000 with the United Pig Farmers Contract Association in Chicago.
That returned $100,000.
That returned $100,000. I don't recall investing the $1,000, but I made $100,000 on it?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Well, I got
some land down in Cameron Parish, Louisiana. It's good. It's good. It's excellent beach front property for about 10 hours a day. The rest of the day, it's underwater.
Yeah. Well, she had the same kind of comments that she made during the Peter Paul lawsuit hearing. Peter Paul was the producer of the production company that put out Spider-Man, and he was interested in retaining Bill Clinton as a public figure to endorse projects and to lure people in foreign countries to promote his business. And Bill Clinton suggested that they take the money that was to be spent, and it was, as I understand it, ended up being over $2 million, and it was funneled into Hillary Clinton's campaign, her senatorial campaign fund. And she denied it. In fact, she made those very same statements that you were just making. I don't recall the president ever having told me that, because if he had told me, I probably would recall it. And therefore, since I don't recall it, then he mustn't have told me. Those silly arguments, the same thing you just said.
I know, that's what's so ludicrous about it all.
And then she ends up becoming Secretary of State with all of this. Now, I haven't even heard of the outcome of the Peter Paul case. It seemed to have totally evaporated.
Yeah.
That we should probably follow up on that, too. But nonetheless, this is a different issue, and the reason we're bringing this up, it seems that nobody who is an actual American has standing, and of course the military should have standing. Every single person in the military that's expected to take some kind of order from a command coming from a person who has not been able to demonstrate that he is an American, and to, quite to the contrary, I don't think anyone really feels he is an American and has no right being in there, other than anyone that works for the corrupt Acorn organization. So, you know, the fact that this issue is allowed to be argued over and over and over in all these different cases, in the Phil Berg case, in the Leo D'Onofrio case, and some of these other soldiers that have come forth. If these cases were actually filed and are genuine cases, then we have the first time in our history a person who is not an American is able to get the court, get the Justice Department to agree with this decree that no one in this country has any standing to do anything. It's absurd. And obscene that this is going on. Every bit, by the way, not to shift gears, every bit as obscene as what's been happening in Hardin, Montana. I'm sure you'll agree that.
I agree 100%. You know, one of the nicest things that I have seen today is, you very well know that I've been watching all of these cases, but I have not seen a document signed by a lawyer demanding another lawyer to stipulate that anything in a case, especially a scheduling order, is to be made final, that signs his name to a document. He signs his name D.O. Van Dyce. I don't know that is D.O. Van Dyce is not a signature. It is a sign off. In Latin,
mm-hmm.
And it comes forth, and he puts the quotation underneath it before he signs his name. His name is Charles E. Lincoln III. He signs, "May the Lord God be with you and with thy spirit, Charles E. Lincoln III." And this is one of the investigative lawyers for Dr. Orley Tanks. And he signed this document that was sent to the Barack Hussein Obama lawyers, DeJute and West. Now, I've never seen that. I haven't never seen this. Somebody sign a document and then just above their signature, "May the Lord God be with you and with thy spirit." There's a lot of movement here, Don, that presents itself in questioning, you know, what's going on out here, and maybe we really might have a movement going on here. We're going to get some justice. And what bothers me now is what major catastrophic event is going to come about to put everything on hold, much like the investigation of FDR in 1941. When they were investigating him just in those last 6 months before Pearl Harbor.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's something in the works. We know that. We've heard the chatter. We're getting corroboration on a story that seems to have grown new legs and new wings. Something that you and I and some others have spoken quite a bit about, and that's the undermining of certain cities in this country, covert attacks planned from within, and we bring this up not to fearmonger, but to bring people's attention to the fact that this is going on again as another diversion to try to head this constitutional crisis off, and it's a crisis against our Constitution and against anyone that stands for the Constitution. They have legalized every aspect of existence, and And we are protected from that by the Constitution. So,
well, I got one for you.
We
I got
be
one for you. I've been looking at this whole thing on the constitutional crisis, and I'm going to lay the foundation for you. The next person in line, if Barack Hussein Obama is dismissed out of office, and how can you impeach a man that is in an office fraudulently in the first place? I mean, there's no impeachment here. This is a total arrest, and you're going to jail. You're not the president. You've taken this office under false pretenses. Everybody that has been associated with him in the field of being his vice president, in sitting on the cabinet post, every one of them are dismissed summarily. Boom. So guess who gets into office next?
Well, I know what I know what the
a lot of people think it's going to be one of the cabinet ministers, but they're all gone. So who's next?
Well, after that it would have to be Speaker of the House.
You got it, Nancy Pelosi herself.
Now, what about
her
the
entourage of Nancy Pelosi individuals and homosexuals and queers and perverts? Her entourage would walk into the presidency of the United States.
What about the fraud that she herself committed in assisting Obama in this fraud? And I'm speaking
but
about...
But that would have to be an order of investigation by the House of Representatives. Because she was duly elected by her constituents, not because of Barack Hussein Obama's fraudulent papers. She was elected to the office of congressman from her district by her people. Therefore, she can only be investigated by her constituents in Congress. And yes, she would be impeached because she fraudulently documented the documents to put President Obama in office, this long-legged MacDaddy that is not a president.
Okay, and then that brings us to Barney Frank, and he's running.
And there's the next guy in line.
I'm just throwing these names out. I mean, but you know what I'm saying.
I mean, it's worse than the Three Stooges. Remember the Three Stooges? You know, Curly, Larry, and Moe, the original three?
Yes. Well, we have the new ones. We have McCurley, Mobama, and Hilary.
And one of those actors is definitely putting on some pounds to get up there in the poundage with Curly. And I remember another actor that went out and put on over 80 pounds to do a show as he played Al Capone in Scarface. And it took him over 8 years to lose that weight.
Wow.
That's De Niro, by the way.
Yeah. Robert De Niro did put on.
He put on 122 pounds to play the part of Scarface. Granted, it was a great movie. Granted, it was good entertainment. But to basically put his health in that kind of jeopardy just for a stupid movie. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
I guess it's because, you know, one of the nicest things, Don, I don't have a television. I don't watch TV. When they clicked off and went over to this digital format, all of a sudden I'm listening to radio. All of a sudden, if there's something I want to watch, it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I watch the movie. I don't watch television, and I pick and choose the movies I want to watch. Now, granted, I have a television in my house, but I use it with the VCR. You know,
yeah,
I don't listen to their commercials.
Yeah, you're using it as a monitor, as a video.
I use it as a monitor to pick and choose what I want. It's just like, you know, it's like having a garden. I'm going to go out in the garden and pick tomatoes today. No, I'm not going to. I'm going to bypass the tomatoes. I'm going to go over here and eat the watermelon. Give me some watermelon. You know?
Well, Well, this is interesting stuff. So, so the next date, let's recap this.
The recap is we're waiting right this second for the final order from the judge to say that your motion for dismissal is denied. Now, that's obviously, according to the documents that I have right in front of me, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have any money. I'm broke. And yet I'm willing to spend every dime I got to know what the truth is. And these documents, they were not cheap. It doesn't sound like it's a lot of money. It's only 8 cents a page. But when you pull 200 pages, that's $16. $16 is a few days of food for me in my world. It's over half of my telephone bill. But I'm willing to go out and get this. Now, one of the documents that is very pertinent to this is the fact that the lawyers for the plaintiff, for the defendants on Barack Hussein Obama's side, they're basically, shoving it back into Orly Tanks and her investigative team's face, telling them, quote, "You are obviously not a student of military history, period." Wait a minute here. All of a sudden, this guy comes out and he's telling everybody this is a military courtroom. You hear this, the statement? Do I read it again? You are obviously not a student of military history, period. That is like saying, hey, he admits we're in a military courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next sentence, he comes out, because you appear confused, comma, let me be clear, period. He's telling them, you're confused because you're in a military courtroom, and I need to specify and let you know what's going on. Per Judge Carter's order, this comma, that's like a period,
yeah.
Discovery is stayed in this case. It was only stayed till October the 5th, pursuant to Judge Carter's original order.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next sentence plays it all out. It lays it on the ground. We will not agree to any discovery in this case at this time. That's all he wants to say, is there's a military courtroom, and until the commanding officer tells me to release documents, I'm not going to do it. That's what he's saying.
Yes. Okay, well, then we'll be keeping our eyes on that. It sounds like finally somebody is working on the side of the people, at least on the side of truth, where let the cards fall where they may.
Well, in the sentences that came forth from Charles Lincoln, who is the law clerk for Dr. Tanks, he specifically says, and he was in the courtroom, and this is backed up by one of my Marines that was in the courtroom. Quote, the judge specifically said that the scheduling order would only be important if the case were going to go forward, and he seems to have spoken on this point.
Yes.
Now, how do you say he's spoken on this point? The clerk of the court was ordered to put this following in the court record, that the case management, quote, on September the 8th, 2009, the court previously set tentative case management dates. I repeat, on September the 8th, 2009, the court previously set tentative case management dates, period. The court now orders those dates to be made final. That is like saying the judge has told the clerk to make the orders to be final. Well, obviously the judge, this is a preliminary to the basically telling the defendants and the plaintiffs that, hey, I'm going to rule against the defendants, and this case is going to go forward. You guys get ready. The order's coming down tomorrow or the next day. Probably it's going to come out tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, too. So
because all of this came out tonight. This was posted tonight onto the docket records, and I feel that Judge Carter will probably make a stand tomorrow because he knows, Judge Carter knows, when he issues this order, there is going to be a flurry of people, news reporters, and everything out there. And they're going to want to know a whole lot about it. You know, I just found out that Barry from California is on line three. Do you want to take that call, Don?
Sure. Go ahead. Barry?
Hey, Don.
Welcome to Evident Footprint. Is this Barry or Gary?
Barry,
okay.
Actually, you can call me Patriot Bear.
Okay. What's up?
I read your Three Stooges went to Washington.
Go to Washington.
I finished it.
Yeah.
I finished it last night, and I was amazed at what you wrote. You put it very well together. It's kind of confusing trying to follow it, all the dots. But
well, you should see when they're all in a bucket, trying to recognize them for what they are and figuring out, you know, how you can thread them together. But what was confusing to you? Is it the obfuscation put out there by the Obama people or what?
Just the way that Obama's lying about the whole thing. I mean, like you were saying earlier on the show tonight, that he's not even following his book when he speaks about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what you were saying earlier?
Yeah, I say that on the grounds of what has been written and on the grounds of what he has said in videotapes and audio recordings and public statements and political ads, the whole thing, right? I mean,
right, and then the pictures, you were on part six, when you talk about the pictures, how they're all phony.
Yeah, they are, and I go into great detail explaining why. And one doesn't have to be an expert in this. One only needs to really look closely and look a little closer. If you're not seeing it, you know, at one magnification, magnify it a little bit more. This isn't about trying to make the photos look phony. They just are. Let me ask you this, Barry. What led you to start reading these?
I listened to Dr. Deagle.
Okay.
On his show, and you've been on his show, you know, off and on.
Yes.
And then I've been listening to Dr. Ott, and you've been on his show about the what's been happening in Hardin, Montana.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going, that you and Dr. Ott are great together. I mean, you guys really are like a team.
I've got great respect for him, I have to say, for his courage and the accuracy of his information and the amount of time he invests in investigating that stuff. I guess he's doing the same thing I'm doing in his own way. But,
right.
So go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm a veteran, and I'm tired of all these imposters that I have to look up and call my commander-in-chief. Clinton, what he did in the Oval Office. And then you wrote about McCain in the first three parts there, or the first couple parts.
First two parts,
He's a liar with his birth certificate and all that. And now you got the Bush. You know, he was he lied about his service. And all these guys we have to look up to, and all the people that are in the service, that are in the service now or in the past, how can we call these guys commander-in-chief when they're all liars?
Well, that's my point, and you know, when I make this point, and I want to give Drew Raines a chance to comment on this too, but let me just say, I didn't serve in the military. Drew knows this, and Drew's listening audience, as well as my own, know that I have said that. You know, I went through the draft lottery, and it so happened that Richard Nixon resigned the presidency in disgrace at the time when I was just about to be called. I was just about to be called into the war in Vietnam, and I would have gone had that happened. I was against, and I am against war, except when it comes to matters of real defense, and I don't mean attacking countries under the auspice of going after somebody who committed a crime that just because they say they committed the crime. In other words, the lies to foment the war. The two Persian Gulf wars being one such example, or two such examples of the same war. Afghanistan, the same thing. This gives them the ability to move illegal drugs. I have respect for what the soldiers go through. I have respect for everyone in the military that puts their life on the line, and they should not have to do it for an imposter. It's as simple as that. If it's a someone who is genuinely an American, someone who can prove and is willing to go overboard to prove that they are, not to deceive everyone that they are, then so be it. But in this case, all we have is deception at every corner. And I want to allow Drew to comment on that, if I could, Barry.
I don't wonder what you need to comment about. I mean, I served in the Marine Corps. I volunteered to go to Vietnam. I saw Vietnam because I come from a patriot family, and I believe in America, but I was lied to. I spent 10 years in the Corps, and I could have easily have stayed another 10. And it wasn't a piece of cake. I mean, 10 years in the Corps was pretty tough. I had some of the most stringent duty you could possibly get. And I was going to revert back from an officer to enlisted. So, I was going to basically go to boot camp and become a drill instructor. But there was just so much. I mean, I visited boot camp. I visited the command, and there was a few of my troops there. And I just I saw the backstabbing that was going on that they were having to put up with. And I flew all the way to Washington, D.C. I talked to the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps, Lieutenant General Davis at the time, and I talked to Sergeant Major Black at the time, and I talked to Commandant Green. These men, the former Commandant Green, and I just could not see staying in the Marine Corps in a peacetime America because of all the backstabbing. And I'm on your side, Don. I mean, and Barry, I'm on your side 100%. I mean, we don't have the luxury of being able to stand up in the military and say, sir, no, sir, without major
repercussions, you want to say.
Repercussions.
Yeah.
Hey, Drew, I got one question for you.
I got one answer. You may not like it.
Okay. I have a friend that works with me. I work at Mach Reserve Base. And
where?
My friend was in California.
What
and,
base?
Mach Reserve Base.
Mach Reserve Base, he said.
Okay.
Yes. And anyways, we both worked there, and he was in Vietnam, but he wasn't in Vietnam, if you know what I'm saying.
I wasn't in Cambodia, and I can prove it because I was there. I shot pictures.
He could talk about it now because it's been past that time period. But
if he signed a document, I've got two documents over there.
That we left behind.
Is what?
We left people behind there. Our country purposely left them behind.
We definitely have POWs in Vietnam today that are probably in the age group of 62. I think the youngest would be 62 now, and the oldest would be 87. And those men were known, I repeat, do I need to repeat it any louder? Known POWs in the possession of North Vietnamese regulars and guerrilla warfighters of the Viet Cong. And in 1984, there were some very disturbing U-2 plane photographs that were taken of a hamlet area in Vietnam, which was right close to the old BMZ line, but about 60 miles south toward Benoit, and there was a group of white male men with Vietnamese women working in a rice field, and we're not talking about one or two or three or four. We're talking about anywhere from 15 to 20, and there were these white male men were basically slender. They weren't starved, but they didn't have the weight that an American or a Russian would have, and they were being guarded by 10 Viet Cong on the outskirts walking the perimeter. And these are very disturbing pictures that the National Reconnaissance Office has, the National Security Agency has, the Central Intelligence Agency has, and only one officer has ever made an attempt to bring back any POWs, and his name is Colonel Bo Greitz. Now, somewhere along the line, Colonel Bo Greitz got bought off. He still talks about it, but he doesn't talk about it enough. He doesn't talk about it with the real desire of a real patriot. But he can go out and chastise others. And I'm not talking down of Colonel Bo Greitz. Colonel Bo Greitz is the most decorated military man from Vietnam. I would follow the man to a battle any day, provided I knew that it was for truth, honor, and justice. But I feel that Colonel Bo Greitz has lost his way in getting to the age that he is, and the fact that he's got children and grandchildren that are sitting out there that their lives are in danger. And at some point, some people give more credence to the lives of their children and grandchildren than our forefathers did in 1780, 1779, when they were willing to give up their wives and their children and all of their fortunes to form the nation that we now have today.
Mm. Great answer.
I just want to say I respect both of you guys, and I thank you for putting your life on the line on the truth, telling the truth of what's going on.
Well, remember this, Barry. Remember this. Don Nikoloff is going to be, has been, and will continue to be attacked for the messages that he brings forth. Because when the truth comes out, the other side does not attack the truth. They go after the messenger. And you know the messenger is on point and really telling the truth when the other side that is being fought against with the evil that they have starts fighting the messenger and not the message.
Well, you guys are my mentors, you're my heroes, and you have a new fan right here that I'll be listening to you guys all the time. God bless you.
Barry,
God bless you.
Yeah, Barry, I want to thank you for calling in. Is this your first time listening to the show?
I just started listening this week, Don.
Oh, okay. Well, hang in there.
Oh, he's in a new world, man. We got to send him a lemon meringue pie.
you hang in there, Barry, and we want to thank you for your service and the courage to call in and help us share the truth, because that means a lot to me from someone.
Yeah, I'll be calling
position.
in when I can.
Okay, great. Tell your friends about
it. But before you go, do you work the day or night shift?
I work the day shift.
Okay. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Barry.
Oh, well, he hung up.
Oh, I guess we lost him. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was a great call.
Yeah.
Thanks, Seth, for getting rid of that busy tone. Great call. I'm always pleased to know someone took the time to look at the truth, to listen to the truth, and to share it with somebody else. That's what it's about.
Exactly. And I want to let you know, it's only 5 minutes after 11 there in California. Those people out there in San Francisco, that means the big hen is about 7 minutes after the top of the clock, and the little hen is just over to the right on the number one.
Yeah. And it's a lot later on the East Coast, I have to tell you. Drew, I'm hoping within the next week or so to be able to share some in, very interesting information, new information that people haven't heard before.
I said to the right. I meant to the left, where the little hand was on the 11.
Oh, okay.
My eyesight's looking up here, and I'm looking at my clock, and it's turned tilted.
You know, I've been doing a little bit more research on this, on the connections to this Hardin case, and I've still yet to see many of the facts come out, and so.
Well, you want an update? You want, your girl has quit. Your girl quit.
Yeah, I learned
that. She went back to the newspaper.
Well, she's not my girl. It's Michael Hilton's girl.
She's your girl. She quit. She resigned. She turned the keys in. And she did it right. She took it to the sheriff's office, left the keys and everything, and resignation and the whole ball of wax.
Well, I remember on your show, you and I had put forth the benevolent aspirations of two researchers, two truth seekers, who were hoping that the people at the Billings Gazette actually had the compassion to give that lady her job back, and it looks like they did. Isn't that
evidently
wonderful?
They did? And
yeah.
What's really interesting is, now she's writing the truth in her articles into this whole situation. And I'm sure she's probably going to do a bunch of articles over the next few weeks because
yeah.
These guys at this specific company, they are basically packing their bags. The Attorney General for the state of Montana is all over this like bees on honey. He found the Attorney General of the state of Montana is doing his due diligence, and what an attorney general is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, all of a sudden, we've got a righteous attorney general that's doing what he's supposed to do instead of going out here making sure that Mr. and Mrs. Jones have their seatbelt buckled up.
Yeah.
And that the judges are in the courtroom are making sure the fines are being paid. Who cares about the ice cream parlor on the corner making their vanilla ice cream similar to the ice cream corner at the Rexall drugstore who makes vanilla ice cream.
Yeah. Well, you know, Drew, like the argument that I used at the top of the show and on many other shows, that nobody seems interested in doing anything about all of this, this really crime, this fraud that's occurring at the expense of the American people, and this Hardin case is sort of the precursor to this happening very rapidly in a lot of other places, because they've already set up the infrastructure. But I want to assure people that despite the government's unwillingness to address this like they should, this is a major infiltration of our system on a local, on a state, and I should say local, county, state, and federal level, the various dimensions that should be looking into this. I'm appalled at the fact that this is allowed to occur like this. It shows the obvious intent behind the scenes. But I can also tell you that in the extra 2 hours that I spent within the last 24 hours going down the rabbit hole, and the rabbits are holding up picket signs outside their holes, okay? They're holding up the picket signs, telling me, look here, look here, look here. There are some astounding connections to this and what is going on in the Middle East. And it should come as no surprise to anyone when I bring these facts out. I can guarantee you that I've not heard any of this stuff, what I've uncovered, being reported in terms of the truth as to who these people are, and what their business is anywhere in our country, let alone in Hardin, Montana. And this is going to come out pretty soon, so you get ready to put on your seatbelt.
There's some other places out there that like Montana,
mm-hmm.
that are pulling their strings in, and they're being monitored, and now they're even actually being investigated. There's one located in St. Louis, in a suburb of St. Louis, southwest of St. Louis, and the mayor of the town that this prison camp, no, I shouldn't say prison camp, this prison was built in right by the freeway. They've ordered the sheriff and the chief of police to investigate the owners and what's going on with this facility.
Yeah, well, we got the whole list, remember, on Civigenics. That we have the whole list around the country, or at least what they call their new facilities. New facilities. And we got to start making some comparisons and look to see where these things sit on a map. We've actually got to pinpoint them on a map and see how they're connected. That's two mentions of a facility that's sitting on a major highway. Why is that? Why does it have to be right there off the highway? Is that for easy escape or is that to control traffic flow through these areas? It raises a lot of questions. It really does. And why the federal authorities aren't doing anything? Well, all we have to do is look at Congress, the Senate, the administration, and there's a coup going on, and this is just another dimension of the same coup. That there's no doubt about that. What I'm disappointed in is how law enforcement is dragging their feet. And I call out to those people that still have an honest bone or hair on their body to do something about this. And if not, then we've got to depend on the military. And I don't mean the top brass in the Pentagon that are playing this game along with the politicians and the military, the international military industrial complex. Because they have their own interests at heart, and in a few cases, we're not even talking about regular people here. So,
exactly, the military industrial complex has been here. We've been warned about it. We were warned by George Washington 200 years ago when he left office. We were warned about it in 1930, just before World War II outbroke. By Major General Smedley Darlington Butler, a recipient of the Medal of Honor in two different wars, and the Bravette Medal of the United States Marine Corps, which was considered even higher honor than the Medal of Honor was in 1906. And later, Major General Smedley Darlington Butler wasn't even allowed to fight in World War I because the generals in charge believed and knew that if General Butler was placed in command of a unit, not only would the war be over fast, he would take his unit and either die or march to Berlin. The man was 5'7", he was piss and vinegar. He stood up for it, and the next time we heard another man that had any kind of character that was a general that had been in war was Dwight David Eisenhower, who said that we have this military-industrial complex. He actually formulated the saying of the industrial-military complex, and he said it in the last 3 days that he was the president of the United States, because he knew that if he had said it prior to that, they, meaning the powers to be, would have possibly assassinated him.
Yeah. That was his farewell speech to the American people that he brought that out. So, well, Drew, man, it's been a great show tonight. I'm appreciative of the amount of time that you spent digging into,
it was more than 50 minutes.
these sports. Yeah, where have I heard
that
before?
That's a private joke, ladies and gentlemen. Don Nikoloff does 15 minutes of research and talks for 8 hours. Drew Malone Raines III does an hour worth of research, and I can barely get an hour talk.
I know what it takes to understand these documents, if one can even understand them, and the legalese and the terms that describe the various stages of a lawsuit and the discovery process, motions to dismiss, Well, yeah, they're trying to get rid of the lawsuit. They're trying to sweep it under the table. That's not always the case in a lawsuit. But in this particular case, we have a right to know these things. There have been millions of people asking for documentation. You know, that's what makes Barry's call so sweet tonight, is that he alluded to the research that shows all of this. This is information that's backed by documentation, by the way. And I didn't create the documentation. It was presented to the public in one fashion or another, either with the intent to deceive us or just the intent to document it amongst many other things that are being documented. And the challenge is to ferret this stuff out or to fish it out, whether you do it with a hook and some bait or you do it with a fisherman's net or just sticking your hands in there and grabbing for whatever's moving. It's often like that, this path of research and documenting these things. And I appreciate the work that you put into it, because you put long, long, thankless hours behind all of this. And I
just
think
when you figure out where I can get the worms to catch some fish to put food on the table, let me know. I'll go dig the worms up.
All right.
You hit the nail on the head. You know, we do, you and I both, and as well as others, do a lot of research, and we don't get paid. We don't get any money. It's just, you know, donations here, a donation there, and then I'm an electronic engineer, ladies and gentlemen. I have my own process patent that I've not been able to get off the ground, because I got people out there specifically that are bad-mouthing me, what comes out of their mouth, well, he's not an electronic engineer. He's not a Marine. He never served in the Marine Corps, da-da-da-da-da. And I know I didn't serve in the Marine Corps. I've got the dress blues to prove that I wasn't in the Marine Corps. I know that I wasn't in Cambodia. I've got the photographs to show that I wasn't in Vietnam. I'm in Cambodia. I've got the pictures when I was in Vietnam that I wasn't in Vietnam. It blows people away when somebody walks in my home and they see my stature, they see my pride in the Corps, and then they say, you know, I didn't know you had all this. Well, you know, I don't get out here and grab a big drum and start beating a drum on the things that I was able to do. But I sure am attacked for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to start fighting back. I'm going to start letting people know, hey, look, you know, you want a picture of me in London? I got it. You want a picture of me in Brussels? I got it. You want a picture of me in my Marine Corps uniform in those two cities? How about a Marine Corps birthday ball in London? In 1972, where I was in the Marine Corps birthday ball in London. You know, I've got all this stuff. I've got photographs. I've got friends in California that camped out in my backyard as a boyfriend and a girlfriend who were traveling through Europe when I was in Munich, Germany. And I befriended them, and then later was invited to their wedding in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to their wedding in my dress blues, and I have photographs from that. So, you know, I don't need this BS wasn't in Vietnam when I'm wearing a set of dress blues that has the medals all over the place.
Yeah. Well, you know, Drew, you really don't have to justify the things that you say when those that come forward do so in an attempt to attack the truth. It's the same.
You said thankless. Well, that's what it's all about. Vietnam veterans didn't get any thanks when we were in Vietnam and we came home and we were basically chastised. But the veterans that come back from the Gulf War, you want to know what the truth is? Ladies and gentlemen, the men and women that come back from the Gulf War, they're our children. They're our children. We were in Vietnam. We didn't get any praise. We didn't get any pats on the back. But we're going to make darn sure that you don't forget about our children coming back from Afghanistan, coming back from Iraq. We're not going to let you treat them the way we were treated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, Drew, I want to thank you. Tonight was a great show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and vent my spleen.
Yeah, you did it in a mild mannered way tonight, and
well, you
I
didn't hear my show today. You need to talk to Dr. A. Truott. I invited him on the show, and he only got about 40 minutes to talk.
Yeah, I got to talk to him
on
a little
2-hour show.
But well, you know, you got to vent. There's times that you just have to get this stuff off your chest, and I know. And I tell you, not listening to mainstream news for a whole day has been a blessing. It's almost like going through chelation therapy.
Come to my house. I don't listen to them. I listen. They all, you know where I get my mainstream news from? Dr. James David Manning.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's going to be on my show Friday.
Yeah, I know. I'm excited about that.
I didn't know if you knew that. Okay.
Yeah, I am. Tell him I said hello.
Your wife called me again today to confirm.
You better tell him I said hello.
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
There ain't no way. Why am I? You're going to have to call in the show and tell him. You guys call in and say, yeah, I listen to Drew's show.
Hey, yeah, I heard.
No,
you.
I'll be Drew Ranger.
Yeah, no, he's doing great work. And that, there's another example of one person putting the truth out there in a very rational way. It's very difficult to argue what that man says. He knows his Bible. He knows God. He's speaking the truth. He wants what is the best for America. He's not pulling any punches. He's not got some personal agenda that he's promoting. He loves this country, and he's a courageous, courageous man that comes through immediately. So
passionately loves this country.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Boy, I want to hear both of you railing. I want to hear
two
both of
ranters,
you on a rant.
Two ranters on the same station at the same time. Man, you're going to have to get some hearing plugs, some earplugs.
Yeah.
Some hearing device, something to basically muffle some of this off. I'm going to have to go over here and get me some valerian root and drink a whole bottle.
All right. Well, Drew, we're out of time. I've got to say goodnight, but I want to thank you for being on the show. And you're going to be on again next week. So for anyone that's interested, Drew will be on Thursday, the 15th of October. Right.
But I'm on every day, Monday through Friday, ladies and gentlemen, at 2200 hours GMT around the world.
Yes. And your website, by the way, I'm going to give that address out, is amd.elequity.com. For those of you who write faster, you've got
that stands for a Marine's disquisition. It's AMD is in disquisition.
Yes. So that's like a Marine's rant, basically. You just didn't want to call
it. It's an honor to John C. Calhoun's rant.
Yes.
In the disquisition of government. Of 1850.
Yes. So, Drew, I want to thank you for being on the show, and we'll see you next week, okay?
Just because you run out of time, that doesn't mean I do.
Well, then stay up and twiddle your thumbs. Do something. Do some more research.
I got 8 hours of sleep over the last 2 days. Give me a break.
All right. Well, God bless you for the work you're doing, and keep it up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, Don Nikoloff. Evident Footprints. He is the researcher. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to know the truth? Read The Three Stooges Goes to Washington. Thank you, Don. God bless.
Okay. Yeah, all right. You too. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com around the world. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Also, like to thank Barry for calling in and sharing his thoughts on our work on this show and the messages that come out here. We appreciate that. And as well, you, the listening audience, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Join us again tomorrow night when my special guest will be Michael Anthony. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.